The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, The Safe House. As Cardi B and Offset manage marriage, music, and money moves, family security always comes first. The industry, it's a little slick. You've got to have your eyes open, and I've been in it a little longer, so I know how things can be. I just want to make sure the business is correct. The combination of that concern with their love for each other and their family is what has sustained their marriage. We just became closer, Cardi says, of how they have weathered storms over the past 5 years. We understand each other more now. Tell me, it's serious. Locked in for life. Partnership, best friend. Sometimes it's like, okay, he's my husband, but he's really my best friend. We pick each other up when we're down. I feel like nobody has my back like him. And he knows I got his back all the way, no matter what. And nothing could come in between that. It's a safe house, Offset sums up. That security is magnified by being part of a large family. During summer and Christmas holidays, the kids are with him and his wife under one roof. Cardi describes their time together as lit, saying, when they leave it, it is like a big sadness. Reflecting on the beauty of her blended family, she adds, I feel like sometimes people go into a relationship with a man or a woman who has kids with negativity. And I feel like people should embrace it and love it. I love our family and I wouldn't want it any other way. The next article is titled, Get Back Out There. Here are five destinations for Black travelers to explore this summer. Ready to hit the open road or skis again? As more Americans get vaxxed and boosted, both domestic and international tourism are expected to surge this summer. Whether you're planning to head overseas or are thinking of embarking on a cross-country road trip, here are a few itineraries that Black travelers will want to add to their bucket list. First, Maldives. Second, Barbados. Thirdly, New Mexico. Fourthly, Dubai. Fifthly, Houston. Also noted, cruise life. Planning a little fun at sea? These two companies are ready to welcome you aboard. Virgin Voyages. This isn't your grandma's cruise line. Everything you love about the Virgin brand is now being offered at sea. The new Virgin Voyages is a modern, adults-only line with more than 20 eateries, state-of-the-art wellness center, and nightlife you won't want to miss. Hurtigruten Expeditions. For Black travelers in search of adventure, an inclusive expedition cruise might be just what the doctor ordered. This cruise line recently launched a Black travel advisory group to increase its visibility to Black expedition enthusiasts. Will offer trips to Antarctica and the west coast of Africa this fall. The next article is titled, The Kids Are Not All Right. Parents, experts, and young people shed light on why suicide rates for Black teens and young adults have been alarmingly high, even before the pandemic. Jamal Clay was the type of child who always wanted to help people. He was an intuitive soul, and his mother, Rafia Maxey of Chicago, dubbed him her right hand.
Jamal would often wake his mom up early so he could be dropped off at school before the morning bell rang in order to assist teachers in setting up their classrooms. At home, he helped Maxie tend to his younger sister. "I think a lot of times he thought we were both parents," she recalls. "He was very responsible. He was also struggling with his mental health and had been for years." On May 27, 2020, Jamal took his life in their family home. He was 19 years old. His sister found him hanging in the garage. He used the same karate belt he'd utilized for a suicide attempt when he was 12. At that time, Maxie and medical professionals attributed Jamal's mental state and low self-esteem to his being bullied, and he was diagnosed with single-episode depression. Attempts at continued treatment with therapy fell through, with Jamal's providers failing to make agreed-upon home visits, retiring, or not following up with him or Maxie. "There was definitely a stream of events that failed us," Maxie says. "We were left to deal with it on our own and to find a way to work through it when we really didn't have the resources or ability." When the pandemic began, Maxie believes months of isolation due to quarantines pushed her son into a dark place. She also thinks George Floyd's murder, which occurred 2 days before Jamal's suicide, triggered psychological trauma. And then social media is an influencer in itself. Maxie says, "It can almost take your whole self-esteem and tear it into pieces." In recent years, social media has been a dominant force for youth ages 13 to 17, who split their time between Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, and TikTok, according to data from the Pew Research Center. The latter is currently the most used app by teens, with an average of 105 minutes spent on the platform daily. Studies conducted in 2018 revealed that 95% of teens had access to a smartphone, and 45% admitted they were online almost constantly. Research has pointed to the negative impact that viewing race-related traumatic events online can have on mental health of adolescents of color. Social media has also been found to be particularly harmful for youth susceptible to or suffering from mental disorders. Maxie believes it had a negative impact on her son. "Because of it, I don't think he was able to say, 'I'm okay. Things are going to be okay. Life is going to be all right,'" Maxie says. Kamala Uzel, PhD, a psychotherapist based in Durham, North Carolina, started her practice in 2009 with a goal of normalizing counseling for people of color. "If patients see a therapist who looks like them, they may think it must be okay to go to therapy if there is a black therapist," Uzel says. "Even before I opened the practice, I had heard the common belief that African Americans don't go to therapy. We go to church and pray about it, or we're in denial and say, 'That's not really happening.'" Maya Williams, a 26-year-old non-binary person from Portland, Maine, grew up dealing with the consequences of that denial. "My family would talk about mental health, and the conversation would shift to growing pains, or God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. And are you sure you're praying hard enough?" She says prayer has helped black people for years, but at the same time, it's like telling us, "Talk to God about it so you don't have to talk to me about it." "I didn't feel comfortable talking to my parents and unpacking that until I got older." Maya saw a school therapist for a year in eighth grade, Around the same time, she expressed suicidal thoughts to her mother and 2 years before a suicide attempt at 15. Her family didn't know she had tried to take her life until she was 19 and published an essay about her experience. According to the American Psychological Association, African American teenage girls surpass their white and Hispanic counterparts in suicide attempts. Additionally, deaths by suicide among African American adolescent girls rose 182% between 2001 and 2017. Some organizations, such as the National Alliance on Mental Illness in California, point to untreated mental health conditions as one possible cause for the increase. At age 15, the year her parents divorced, Maya started exhibiting signs of dermatillomania, which is repeated urge to pick one's skin, sometimes related to obsessive compulsive disorder. Yet she wasn't diagnosed with the condition until she was 19, at the same time she was diagnosed with anxiety. And she didn't start medication to treat either of her diagnoses until July 2020. I've struggled with mental health issues for a really long time, but now there are new sets of anxieties to process, she says. So I wanted to try medication to feel the way I wanted to feel. While rates of mental illness in African Americans are similar to those of general population, only 1 in 3 Blacks who need mental health care receives it, according to the American Psychiatric Association. There are a lot of different resources that did not exist 3 or 4 years ago, says Tia Dole, PhD, Executive Director of the Steve Fund, an organization that supports the mental health of young people of color. It takes some persistence, and parents too often wait for the child to be in an actual crisis. You might see their withdrawal over a period of months, and then all of a sudden you see a self-injury. The sooner you get in, the sooner they get better. For parents whose children are 18 or older, getting them treatment may be a Herculean task. Such was the case with Atlanta resident Bridget Gibson, whose son, Stephen A. Gibson, a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania, was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder in 2015. He had started exhibiting manic behavior before his diagnosis, and his mother sought professional help. But given that Stephen was an adult, she needed his cooperation. In September 2014, he left Atlanta and became uncommunicative with her. She filed a missing persons report. He was found days later in Miami Beach and taken to a hospital in the area. The doctor told me, "Your son is here and we are going to release him," she says. "I begged the hospital to put him in a facility where he could get additional help. They would not. But when Gibson drove to Florida to pick Stephen up, the hospital wouldn't release him to her. I was devastated," she says. "They released him back onto the streets of Miami. He went missing again for almost 3 months. Stephen returned to Atlanta with his mother that December. After being hospitalized, he started taking medication, attended therapy sessions, and lived in a condo close to Gibson's home. She even managed to get guardianship of Stephen in early 2015, but with restrictions. She could not admit him to a hospital unless he was a danger to himself, and she couldn't force him to take his medication, which in February 2015 he stopped taking. A month later, on March 19, 2015, Stephen died by suicide. He was 26. People of color are now more openly discussing mental health and its associated challenges. But many parents, still don't understand the underlying reasons for their child's struggles. I see a lot of guilt in parents of color, Dole says. They think, if my child is depressed, self-injuring, or engaging in dangerous behavior, somehow I caused it. If my child receives help, then I will be shamed and blamed for their mental illness. But parents, she notes, need to get past this kind of thinking. The root causes of mental illness in children and young adults can stem from a myriad of factors, from environmental to genetic, she points out. And because every child is unique, with a different set of circumstances, signs that they may be struggling present differently. The best thing for parents to do is talk, listen, pay careful attention, and be open to learning. Because therapy wasn't as accessible or acceptable in the African American community, there are lots of parents and grandparents who don't believe in their pain, Uzel says. 1 in 4 people will experience some type of mental health challenge. It may not be a long-term condition, it may be short-term, but 1 person in 4 is going to experience it. That means it's normal to go through mental and emotional distress, and we need to normalize talking to someone about it. The next article is titled, Lifelines to Lean On. These resources help raise awareness and offer support to young people. The Steve Fund has created a special keyword, Steve, that young people of color can text to 741741 to connect with a trained crisis counselor. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline provides 24/7 free and confidential support for people in distress. Dial 800-273-8255. The National Alliance on Mental Illness allows you to text NAMI to 741741 to receive free 24/7 crisis support. Mental Health Real Talk, founded by Bridget Gibson, focuses on ending the stigma of mental health challenges. Soul Survivors of Chicago, founded by Rafia Maxey, donates the shoes of loved ones who have died to organizations and individuals in need and provides educational workshops on the importance of mental health assessments. The next article is titled, Deborah Roberts' Vision. Through richly textured mixed media collages and paintings that are both poignant and playful, the artist aims to redefine the conception of Black beauty and reclaim the ideology of Blackness in American life. For me, beauty isn't just this idea of a beautiful woman with blue eyes and blonde hair, explains visual artist Deborah Roberts, speaking from her home in Austin, Texas. It is the iconic girl, the grandma, like Ida B. Wells, strong women who probably are not considered beautiful by Western standards, but who are beautiful in their own way, in the way they protect and take care. Mixed media artist Roberts, 59, combines intricate and layered collages and paintings to redefine the ideal of Black beauty and promote pride in our Blackness through her work. She specifically focuses on children as a way to shield them from the structural racism, sexualized stereotypes, random violence, and social injustice that must be confronted daily in Black America. I consider the women at my church beautiful, especially the elder stateswoman who used to wear all white in those little white caps, Roberts recalls. They would order the service, they would lead in song, and they would get up and start prayer. To me, that was very beautiful. I love the idea of them having the responsibility and meeting that responsibility. Growing up in Texas, Roberts began questioning her own beauty at age 8, the same age as many of the subjects featured in her art. I'm one of 4 girls. I'm number 3. And I wanted to be different from my sisters, she recalls. I was redefining myself, separate from my family, wanting to be included but recognized as different. My mom would dress us all in the same dress, same brand, but the colors were different. I always got red or purple. I started experiencing my own self and my own beauty. I was the first one to get glasses, so my mom let me pick them out. Funky blue cat-eyed glasses that are now in vogue, but back then were considered ugly. But they were cute to me. I was already a fashion statement in the 3rd grade. Robert's mother was religious, and when her daughters misbehaved, the punishment was to read the family's treasured, oversized King James Version of the Bible, the one with the Victorian text. Roberts discovered divine inspiration in the punishment, becoming enthralled with the Renaissance renderings of Michelangelo's paintings from the Sistine Chapel and with the works of Leonardo da Vinci. I was drawn to the paintings and I started drawing, says Roberts, confessing that she didn't actually read the Bible, not only because of its complicated language, but also because she was mesmerized by the artwork. That's why I started drawing hands. Hands are so very important to me, she says, and even in my practice today, I draw beautifully rendered hands and faces. It was so special, but we weren't allowed to read that Bible on our own. I had to be in trouble to get into those pages, and so I guess I stayed in trouble. Ironically, the artist's exuberant and thoughtful artwork is created with the intention to protect children who are exposed to troubles of this world. In black art, there weren't a lot of people talking about this, she explains. We talk about being a black woman, our hair, our body, our sexuality, and the way people see us. But nobody was doing the work of looking into childhood. And we had to put on those gloves to fight for our beauty and fight for our identity. We now have to defend our beauty and the way we dress. So I wanted to show the vulnerability of young children, especially boys, when that toxic masculinity appears as early as the 3rd grade. Most of the definitions that apply to black boys and black girls are very negative and not uplifting, and that's why most of my images are floating. I am lifting them up. I'm not grounding them. They're moving, and that's what I'm hoping that my art does. Her latest work on view from June 9th through July 23rd at the Stephen Friedman Gallery in London is a new direction for Roberts, using black backgrounds instead of white. What I want from the black paintings is that you really have to work hard to see them, to see our humanity, she explains, and that's the exercise of the work. You have to work to see this person, and when you recognize that, then you are there. You see them. You can't unsee them. And so, that's what I want, that reflection. It's like shining a light on something, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. The next article is titled, America, According to Kwame. With his new cookbook, Chef Kwame tells the story of America through the lens of his ancestral roots. For some people, the quintessential all-American meal starts with a cheeseburger
right off the grill and ends with a slice of apple pie. Maybe there's even an ice-cold soda to wash it all down. If you ask Chef Kwame, that menu has a different look and taste. Smoky Jamaican jerk chicken, spicy Trinidadian curry, savory Puerto Rican pollo guisado, fragrant Nigerian suya, and even a bubbling pot of crawfish etofi by way of Louisiana. That's because his America is less about what's been molded in idyllic ads and more about his lived experience as a son of the African diaspora. Kwame, a classically trained chef, restaurateur, James Beard Award winner, and top chef judge, knows his way around the kitchen, but it's his familial ties to Jamaica, Nigeria, Trinidad and Tobago, and the American South that serve as the source for his first cookbook, My America, Recipes from a Young Black Chef, due out on May 17th. That's why it's called My America. It's my version of American cuisine, how I saw it through my lens growing up here, he says. I wanted to showcase that, at the essence, these dishes are as refined as anything else, and they should be respected as such. Through the recipes in the book, he's set off on an exploration of his ancestral kitchen. My America is a cookbook, but at times it reads as part history lesson, part personal memoir. This was intentional. I wanted to tell that story, Kwame says. The food tells the story of the slave trade. If you really read through these recipe excerpts, you'll understand where our people went and the influence that we have had and the tentacles that have gone across the world from the diaspora. The idea for the cookbook came immediately after his memoir, Notes from a Young Black Chef, hit shelves. It also came as his star continued to rise. Last year, he was appointed executive producer at Food and Wine magazine, balancing the role with a full calendar of TV appearances and events. In between all that, he traveled to his family's homelands to fully immerse himself in the food culture. In Nigeria, he ate and listened to the stories of the food. He toured Jamaica. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Avra Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.